Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by former Senate Minority Leader Gretchen Whitmer here in MERS World Headquarters. A little later, we're going to be talking with Justin Amash about Rand Paul. He was in Holland and DeWitt and Macomb County and Flint over the weekend. He's going to give his assessment on how he thinks his candidate's going to do on the presidential front. You didn't make any of those stops, did you, Gretchen?
I was not there. I had other things going on this weekend.
What could be more exciting than seeing a Rand Paul campaign event?
What couldn't be more exciting?
We've got a new Democratic Party chair. That's a little exciting.
Yeah, I think it's great. Brandon Dillon, I had the opportunity to work with him both in the Senate when he was on staff and in the House when he was a House member. And I think he's going to bring the type of energy and focus and fight that the party so desperately needs.
There was a little bit of consternation there for some members about this being kind of a done deal. Does that make you uncomfortable in any way?
The nature of it is that our chairman decided to run for Congress. The party needs to move swiftly and have some leadership that's ready to go. And I think he and Lavora Barnes bring together totally different strengths and a unified vision. And I think that's exactly what we need as a party. So I'm very comfortable with it.
How do you think he's going to do as the next party chair?
I think Brandon's got fire. Anyone who's seen him operate in the House knows that he's very eager to take on a tough challenge and to meet that challenge and to beat that challenge. And that's exactly what's before us as we look to 2016 and 2018.
There's no way he's going to be able to keep his job. I think he's going to announce later today that he's going to step down from the legislature. That would be really hard to do, wouldn't it?
Both are full-time jobs, there's no question, and I would anticipate Brandon probably is going to make the transition into being a full-time chair pretty quickly.
And so let's talk about the big subject that's going to be in the Capitol. And you know what? Isn't it funny that the big subject hasn't changed since you left the Capitol? The road funding. Give me your impression of what you're seeing right now.
We are a state that desperately needs investment in our infrastructure. Our people want to see the legislature step up and make the decisions, set the priorities, and live with the consequences, even if it's a tough thing to do. During my time in the legislature, we took a lot of tough votes. Votes that will come back and be parts of campaigns if any of us ever runs for office again. But they were the right thing to do. And to see that the House was able to thwart us back in lame duck, and now we've got House and Senate versions that don't match, and there's a lot of work to be done to make some sort of a investment in infrastructure, is just mind-boggling, and I understand the frustration of the electorate.
What we're seeing right now is the Senate and the House passing versions of a road funding plan that includes chunks of the general fund. What's your impression of why that wasn't part of a final solution back in 2014?
Because it's not real. To say that you're going to use some general fund money means every single year you could have a fight over whether or not that investment is made. Our kind of mantra as a Democratic caucus was there were a number of things that had to be a part of a road funding plan for us to even consider supporting it. A full fix, not just patching holes in perpetuity, meaning that it was going to be something that was an investment that we had a long-term commitment to, that a future legislature couldn't muck around with and move money around, and that there was going to be relief for people in the middle that have been struggling the most with pension taxes and cuts to our schools and people that have been bearing the burden of Rick Snyder and the Republican agenda for the last 5 years now. And so this using general fund is more shell game and really creates the situation where I believe Republicans are going to take more money out of schools. I think that's a very real threat. And as you use the general fund to back things up, everything you care about, whether it's health care for the poorest, it's public safety, or it's educating our kids, all of that is at risk.
Now, it does look like the Republican legislature is going to try and move this thing without Democratic support. Is that kind of what you're seeing here?
I would have to imagine that that's how they're going to have to do it, because I have talked to enough of my former colleagues to know that those priorities of protecting people and making sure it's a real fix are still the party priorities. And I think that reflects what people want, too.
So if you've got the House and the Senate are passing a road funding plan that includes general fund money, it seems like they're kind of steering the ship here on Snyder. Snyder can't be happy about that, can he?
I think the governor missed a great opportunity to really stand up and fight for a plan back in lame duck. And when he didn't and embraced Proposal 1, I think that that really conceded authority to the legislature. And even though it was Jace Bolger heading the Titanic at that time, now you got a different set of Republicans who are hell-bent on the same course. And I think it's a very dangerous situation, and the governor's lost control.
Well, what do you mean by that? I mean, he came out in support of Proposal 1. Ultimately.
Who did? Bolger
or the governor? No, the governor.
Yeah, of course he did, because that was his plan. The plan that Randy Richardville and I put together, which was a bipartisan plan, would have solved the problem, but the governor couldn't stand up to his own Republican majority in the House and get a vote on that plan. That would have solved the problem, and we wouldn't be here today talking about this, and the governor would be in a heck of a lot stronger position as he's trying to get a lot of his agenda through this legislature that his party controls.
So Proposal 1 was all about Jace Bolger, then, is what you're saying? He just had to do what he needed to do at the time?
Jace Bolger beat Governor Snyder on that, and that's why we ended up with Proposal 1, absolutely.
You mean the governor didn't push hard enough to try and get a vote in the House?
No, he didn't. He's the head of the Republican Party. The Republican Party controls the House of Representatives. He couldn't get the speaker in his own party to even open up the board for a vote, to let the members vote and let everyone in the lobby corps and the businesses and the builders all go to town and try to get legislators to cast a vote in favor of the plan that we passed in the Senate. The governor couldn't even get him to open up the board.
Well, now, Bolger said that he didn't have the votes in his chamber for that.
How do you know until you put it up on the board?
Well, I'm just going by what the speaker said. If the speaker doesn't think he can get 56 votes.
He can take account and he can tell you what he thinks it's going to be, but until the board is actually open, that's all, speculation. Legislators are elected to cast votes, even if they're tough votes. That's what they're supposed to do. They should have opened up the board and had those legislators say yes or no, and if they said no, come up with a plan.
Now, you've been behind these closed doors and these road talks before. How would you describe it? Is it frustrating? Is it productive? I mean, what word would you fall back on if you had to describe the process that we're kind of in right now, this behind the scenes negotiating?
So much is done behind closed doors, and that's not really how our democracy is supposed to work. I think it's extremely unfortunate. And even behind the closed doors, there are other doors behind those doors. As a member of the Democratic, leadership, there were always pre-meetings that the Republicans had before we walked into the room. And so knowing that really kind of, I think, demoralizes you that this is a process that's fair and open and that is able for the public to participate in, or at least know what is actually going on. And it's very frustrating. I'll tell you, when I was in the House, at least in those days, we had a woman Democratic governor. We had a woman chair of appropriations, Republican Shirley Johnson. We had a woman leader in the House Democrats, Diane Byrum, and I sat at that table. Last session, I was the only woman at that table. This session, there's not a single woman sitting there. So when you talk about a state that 50% of our population doesn't even have a seat at the table, it always makes you wonder about the decision-making, how they arrive at the decisions, and whether or not they really reflect the will of the people. And I would say they don't.
Let's talk about the will of the people here a second. Going into 2016, there's a lot of talk about a lot of different ballot proposals that could appear. What would you like to see on the ballot in 2016 for the voters to talk about and decide?
I think it's time for us to look at how we draw districts in the state of Michigan. And I don't think it's a Democratic agenda item. I think it's a nonpartisan, a good government agenda item. We have got the most partisan drawing, and that's why you've got a situation where the Tea Party is setting the agenda, because the vast majority of legislators there are elected in a Republican primary, and the Tea Party dominates the Republican primary in many districts. That means many of us don't have a voice at the Capitol, much less a voice that is reflective and representative of us as a state. How do we have Gary Peters and Debbie Stabenow representing us on the federal level, and yet a Tea Party-controlled legislature setting an agenda that continues to cut from our schools and give tax breaks to, big corporations, out-of-state corporations? It's not what the people want. The people want is to have their voices heard, have responsible government who is focused on solving problems, finding common ground where they can, but setting an agenda that reflects the agenda of the people. And I think that would be the most important, best thing that we could do, is change how our voices are determined in the legislature.
So what are you envisioning then? Something like an independent commission kind of drawing the maps, like what we have in Arizona?
Absolutely. Something that takes it away from the legislatures. Legislators take care of themselves, take care of their parties when they draw districts. Maybe not on every vote that they cast, but that's what they do when they are doing redistricting. It's a very partisan process. We need to take the partisanship out so that we have a legislature that better reflects the people.
Well, but what if the Democrats were to win control of the legislature in 2020? Then they would be in charge of the maps. Would the process be any fairer?
No,
you could draw
maps.
So. You could draw the maps so the Democrats could go ahead and decide what the policy in the states are.
You know, that's a lovely hypothetical from my vantage point. But I think when it comes down to good government and the right policy, partisanship belongs nowhere when you're talking about the most fundamental thing, which is drawing lines to ensure that one voice has one vote in the legislature.
What do you think about medical, or not even medical, recreational marijuana, 2016? Is that something you can jump behind?
I don't know. I really don't know. I haven't.
Really? Why?
I think that it's worth discussing, and I'm probably inclined to be supportive, but without more detail in terms of what that actually looks like, I think there are a lot of questions. You know, I really was an avid supporter of medical marijuana, and then the Attorney General's office absolutely failed the people by not participating in the rulemaking, not making it a priority. This Attorney General that we have right now, I think he would be as bad as his predecessor in terms of ensuring that the law reflects the will of the people. And so I have reservations based on that more than anything.
So you're going to be teaching a class in the fall. Is this true?
I am. I'll be. I just got done teaching at Michigan State, and this fall I'll be teaching at the University of Michigan.
So oh my goodness!
For all those people who think I can't, you know, stem both sides of the river, I'm very excited to do it, and I've loved my experience at Michigan State, and I'm really looking forward to joining the Ford School in the fall.
That's really exciting. What else have you been up to?
I've been enjoying myself.
Oh, really?
You know, I've been doing a lot of things. I've been doing some studying. I have. Starting the National Charity League chapter with my daughters here in the Lansing area, which is a great leadership opportunity for girls and their moms. And I've been undertaking a lot of things. We're going to the Galapagos Islands soon for a trip, which we're really excited about. And
that
then
is awesome.
I'll be back in the real world after Labor Day.
Did you see yourself running again for an office at any point?
You know, I never thought I would run for office growing up, period. So long as I think that there's something that I can contribute and there is a need for leadership that cares about setting the right priorities and working with people to find common ground, but stands up for the priorities of the people who elected them, I would entertain the possibility of throwing my hat in again. But at this point, I don't have any solid plans to talk about.
The Galapagos Islands sounds a lot more fun.
Well, it'll be a trip of a lifetime. I'm very lucky, and three generations of my family are going, and it'll be a lot of fun and a lot of family quality time.
after all that quality family time, then you may want to jump into something.
Might be like lame duck session. I don't know. We'll see.
Gretchen Whitmer, former Senate Minority Leader, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. Appreciate it.
Always good to be with you, Kyle. Thank you.
Now, Lauren, you were in Port Huron over the weekend, and you got to see the Democrats elect its new party chair. It wasn't unanimous, though. I thought that was kind of interesting.
There were a couple dissenting votes, and for the most part, the dissent was quashed prior to the vote. But there were a few people that still expressed problems with the process. A lot of people from Southeast Michigan, in particular, felt like they were kind of shut out, and that the leadership kind of took control of this right away. A few people called for a 45-day waiting period to see if anybody else was interested in the position, but they went ahead and elected Dylan.
Well, it's no surprise that Lauren was going to step down, right? So I suppose if anybody wanted to get in, they had a couple weeks to get in, but. Still, I think maybe there was some folks who maybe wanted their own candidate in, maybe didn't have a chance to get their own.
Right. And I think the main thing that people were saying is it felt like Dylan was selected. You know, that was kind of what they were talking about. You know, it felt like he was the heir apparent.
When they asked for a vote, how many no vote hands went up?
You know, I didn't get an exact count. I would say probably like four or five.
So in a room of...
Yeah, 100 and some folks, you know, it was very near unanimous for Dylan. And a lot of people expressed that they don't have a problem with Dylan. it's not an issue with that. It's an issue with the process that was, you know, taken to choosing him as the successor.
And then after the meeting, how would you describe Brandon Dillon's attitude?
Oh, you know, he was very understanding of some of the frustrations. He said he would really work to be more transparent. He was, you know, obviously very happy and very excited to, you know, get started on things. But he did take note of some of the frustrations that were going around the room, and he said he'd like to work to help that. So
Craig, Brandon Dillon goes from the person the Republicans don't want on the Appropriations Committee as far as heading it up to now being the Democratic Party chair. You know, now would have been the time for Kevin Cotter to say, you know what, we're going to make you now the minority vice chair of appropriations.
Consume a little bit more of his time. But the budget's over, so they're not doing as much on appropes these days. But there could have been something there if Rep. Dillon ultimately decided to stay in the House. But I don't think that's going to happen.
So we've had a little bit of news this weekend. Actually, we had Rand Paul in town, made quite a few stops. I was able to talk with Justin Amash during one of those stops in Holland. Let's go ahead and hear that clip right now. Congressman Amash, talk about the amount of interest that you've been able to get here for U.S. Senator Rand Paul.
Well, there's a lot of enthusiasm throughout the state, but especially here in West Michigan. I was at some parades this morning in the Grand Rapids area, and people were coming up to me during the parade saying they're excited that Rand Paul's in town. Some of them said they'd be here today, and others said they wish they could make it. But people are excited about a Republican who's doing things differently, who's standing up for our Constitution, standing up for the whole Bill of Rights, and trying to bring new people into the party, people who have not traditionally voted Republican.
Mm-hmm. What do you think Rand Paul does to the Republican Party as far as bringing out this liberty movement that we're starting to see more of?
Well, he expands the Republican Party. I think when you're talking about a presidential candidate, you need someone who's going to grow the party. We've seen in the last few presidential races, we haven't had a candidate who could bring out new voters, and that's resulted in a Democratic president winning. So, well, we need someone who's going to grow the party. He does that. It's a mix of people with more libertarian leanings, traditional conservatives, and independent people, and some Democrats who are interested in trying something different because they've seen the failures in their own party.
Put on your political pundit hat here a second. Yeah. By the time we get to the Michigan primary, how many candidates on the Republican side do you think there will still be?
Oh, I think you're still going to... it's hard to guess, but you're still going to see quite a number of candidates, I think.
Five, six, seven, somewhere
yeah,
in there?
I think so.
And Rand will still be here?
Rand has the basis of support to go for the long run. So I think he's going to be a durable candidate.
All right, very good. Also got a chance to speak with Rand Paul. He did a little bit of a press availability, about 7-8 minutes with reporters. We can go ahead and listen to that clip right now as well.
All right, I'm Rep. Justin Amash from the Grand Rapids area. 3rd District, and here to welcome Rand Paul. We're excited to have him here in town. He's been making his way throughout the state of Michigan. He's growing the Republican Party. We're excited throughout the whole state. As I've been traveling throughout my own district, people have been saying, thank you for bringing Rand Paul here. Thank you for what you're doing, standing up for the entire Bill of Rights. And we have with us here today some other West Michiganders. We've got Mike Hewitt from the 2nd District, our 2nd District Chairman, Chuck Yob, a longstanding leader within the Republican Party. We've got former State Representative Joe Havman, and we've got 8th District Chairman Tom McMillan as well. And I think each of them would love the opportunity to say what they like about Rand Paul.
Listen, I want to first off echo the congressman's sentiments. Welcome to West Michigan, Senator Rand. As chair of the 2nd District Republican Committee, I want to say what Senator Rand Paul does is he brings liberty both to the Republican Party and to America. So I'm excited about his candidacy. Welcome and good luck.
Thank you. Well, I've been around politics a long time, and one of the main reason I'm supporting Rand Paul, first of all, I love him, I love his issues, but I think he's the best one in all the races to beat Hillary Clinton in the fall.
Hi, I'd just like to say thanks to the senator for his positions on corrections, for recognizing that the Republican Party needs to lead the reform on corrections. And this is not about wanting more crime or wanting disrespecting victims. It's about liberty. It's about finding a solution to our corrections problem without very expensive incarceration that we've done for so long in the past 20 years.
And I was just involved with fighting Proposal 1. We beat it 80-20 despite the good old boys in both parties. And that's what I appreciate. One of the many things about Rand is that he stands up to the good old boys, the establishment, and in Washington, like we did here in Lansing, and in the when we defeated it by 80-20, we sent a resounding message that you got to listen to the people. And I really trust Rand. He is the one who listens to the people and will shake up Washington and really get us back to prosperity and liberty.
Well, thanks everybody for coming. And one of the things we've been talking a lot about as we've gone around the country is that in five states won by President Obama, we're actually leading Hillary Clinton. Michigan, that was won by President Obama, we don't lead Hillary Clinton, but we're ahead of all other Republicans against Hillary Clinton, and we think that shows that we have the best chance to beat Hillary Clinton in the fall.
I'll start it off. One of the things that you've gotten a lot of attention for is destroying the tax code. Mm-hmm. You want to make a flat tax of about 14.5%, and I know that's gotten mixed reviews or mixed opinions. Can you tell us about that and why you think that's good for the working class in Michigan?
If you talk to Republicans, it's gotten a great reception, and the reception is we'd much simplify the tax code. Instead of 70,000 pages of tax code that are chasing American jobs overseas, we'd bring it down to where your tax return can be filed on one piece of paper, one rate, 14.5% for individuals, 14.5% for companies. But here's the thing. We've been losing jobs. I don't care whether you're an owner of a business or whether you work in a business. We've been losing American jobs for decades overseas. It's because we're chasing them away with an onerous tax system. This would greatly simplify it, but also would lower the burden and millions of jobs would be created.
Senator, regarding the recent breach with the Office of Personnel and Management, your take on what happened with the resignation of Ms. Archuleta yesterday and as president, how would you address security issues of this type?
I think it's a good example of maybe the government's not very good at keeping your records private, and we should be very careful with how many records we give up. But there will always be some records the government needs to be secure for state secrets, for national defense, and we need to do a better job. And so that is a function of government, and I would strive to make it better. But you need it to be secure. You can't have everybody's records being released to the public.
Any specifics on how you would do that?
Well, I think a lot of them are technical details as to how you'd secure records, but we do need to do a better job. And there are records and secrets that have to be kept, and so we have to do a better job.
Senator, do you have a position on what role the federal government should have when it comes to keeping Asian carp out of the Great Lakes?
It's not an issue that I've really investigated a lot, and I think there do have to be some rules about introducing foreign species, but I'm not sure I know much more than that at this point.
Okay. There's been a proposal trying to cut off the Chicago River, to cut it off from the Great Lakes. Is that something that should be explored at all?
Well, I've heard about there are people wanting a wall between Illinois and Michigan, but no, I really don't have any specific information. Sorry.
Andrew, anybody else? You talked about beating Hillary Clinton in the upcoming presidential race. The latest national poll shows that Donald Trump is polling ahead of yourself and Jeb Bush. Wondering, what's your opinion? Do you think Donald Trump helps or hurts the Republicans' shot at the White House in 2016?
I think in a 15-person race, there's going to be a lot of ups and downs, and the race is being split 15 ways. One of the polls that we're paying more attention to is who does best against Hillary Clinton, and that if you poll my candidacy against Hillary Clinton, nobody else in the party is doing better at beating her.
Can you expand a little bit further on your corrections policy and how you would reform that system?
All right. I've introduced about 10 different bills on criminal justice reform. One of them is on civil asset forfeiture that says that you're innocent until proven guilty. Most Americans think that's true, but it's actually not that way. The government can take your money or your property without a conviction, without a charge. So I would like to change that law to say that you have to have a conviction before the government takes your property. We also have some on saying that some of the minor drug possession crimes should go from felonies to misdemeanors. I think that if you've served your time and made a youthful mistake, We ought to try to get people back incorporated into the workforce. I'm talking about nonviolent stuff now, you know, nonviolent crime. But I think we need to have the ability to give people a second chance. The other way of looking at it, purely from a fiscal conservative point of view, if you want to put somebody in jail for 5 years for marijuana versus, you know, making them pick up trash and making them get a job, putting someone in jail is extraordinarily expensive. Hundreds of thousands of dollars are spent on putting somebody in jail. I want to reserve the spots in jail for people who are attacking people violently and committing violent crimes, and I want those people locked up the full extent of their time, and maybe some of the nonviolent, youthful people we could spend less time incarcerating them. Right. Maybe Senator one more.
DC, do you have the last question?
Sure.
Yes.
Senator, the last poll showed that you were polling about 4% in Michigan. What will it take for you to gain more support in our state? And can you walk us through what you were saying inside this event today?
Yeah. The last poll, there have been several polls, and we've been up and down, but typically in the first tier in almost all of the states. We've also led in some of the Michigan polls for the Republican primary. But the number one most important thing for all voters is who can beat the opposing party's nominee. And right now, even in that most recent poll, we poll higher than any other Republican against beating Hillary Clinton, and I think that's the most important news. Thanks, everybody.
Then this morning, Craig, we woke up to news that Paul Mitchell is going to run for the 10th Congressional District seat. That makes four people official: Phil Pavlov, state senator, former state senator Alan Sanborn, and the clerk out of Shelby Township. And Jack Brandenburg's probably going to get in this too. What do you think Paul Mitchell is in this whole field of candidates?
Well, he brings some name ID. I mean, having attached himself to Proposal 1 as one of the top opponents of that, he has some name ID there. But his big hurdle is going to be that he just ran for Congress in a different district a year ago.
That's going to be a little hard here. He's lived in Saginaw County. Now, I guess he's moving in Lapeer County. That carpetbagger label would be pretty easy to tag on him, you'd think.
Not only that, but the way he's moving from, you know, political topic to political topic, someone could say, you know, this guy's more worried about politics than doing what's right for the 10th district. I mean, it seems like that's an argument that could come up as well.
Very swift as far as the movements here, as far as the segue, whether it's involving himself in a super PAC or then moving on to Proposal 1 or the Republican Party finance chair, or, you know, dabbling with a possible state Senate race. He's been in this Republican game pretty intensively since he stepped down as the CEO of Ross Education.
But still, I mean, he had some of these same arguments against him when he ran in 2014 in the primary, and he did pretty well against John Molinar, even though just about all of the establishment was against him. So he's going to have a similar opposition in this race, but if there are more candidates to divide up the opposition against him, maybe it turns out differently for him.
What do you think he would have to do differently in this race that would make the results a little different?
I think a couple things. I think one, I think he went negative against Molinar really hard, and I think that actually backfired on him in that one-on-one race. So I wouldn't expect him to go as negative against Pavlov and Brandenburg if Brandenburg does get in, but who knows? Maybe he does, because it's a Macomb County race and things often go negative in those races there. But in addition, I would expect him to just hit on this Proposal 1 subject over and over and over and over again. Proposal 1 did terrible statewide. It did really terrible in Macomb County. So if he can just attach himself to the anti-Proposal 1 movement and make that, who is Paul Mitchell? If reporters start describing him as the number one opponent of Proposal 1, I think that helps him a lot.
And I would say, too, I think the more accessible he is in trying to ingrain himself in the community, I think the better. We know he can run a good aerial war. He can put on TV ads. Mm. We know he can do radio. He can do good media, too. He showed that during Proposal 1. He's very apt at debating issues and being available. So I would think that the more he can get his name out there in the media and talking in small groups, I think the better off he is. He's very personal in the small groups and the one-on-ones. I think he does really well.
He's been on the podcast before. When you do talk to him one-on-one, he's very charismatic, good in one-on-one situations. When he ran in 14, he was very hard to get a hold of. I know, MERS staff tried to interview him, and we kept not being able to get him on the phone. So it would probably do his campaign well to just put him out there, and that would undercut this argument that he's a carpetbagger and he's a mm-hmm. politician if people say, well, on a one-to-one level, I don't see that when I talk to him.
Yeah, he seems pretty personal to me, and he doesn't have an office to run from, which could be of a benefit in the sense that he could go out there. He has a little bit more freedom maybe to move around to these Republican Party events. He has really gone from an unknown quantity to a known quantity in the course of 2 or 3 years. So I think the grassroots of the Republican Party know who he is. I think it's just reaching, you know, your average voter at this point.
Yeah, he's definitely known in Lansing circles. It'll be interesting to see how well he's known in the 10th District.
All right, Craig. Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Lauren Gibbons, Gretchen Whitmer for stopping by to MERS World Headquarters here.
I think as we close this podcast, it just seems like something was missing today. I mean, we had Justin Amash, Rand Paul, Gretchen Whitmer. I don't feel like it was all quite there.
Well, because we didn't have Jacob.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, we didn't have Jacob Cancel on the podcast.
Why did you name a whole bunch of Republican or political candidates and then lead it to me?
Well, we had some all-stars on the podcast, but it still wasn't quite where it could have been.
I just want to make clear I'm not running for any office if that's what Craig is getting at here.
I think we just missed your analysis, yeah. Jacob.
Well, maybe next time.
All right, we're going to hold you to that. Until next time, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.